Over the decades, quite a few guests on the program have become friends. Okay, quite a few were friends before they were guests on the programs. But then there's another category of people who become terribly important to me. And one of them is sitting opposite, Gillian Mears. Gillian and I last talked in 2013, and you can listen to the show because it's in our archive, a very popular program for podcasting. We talked about her life growing up in Grafton, her married life, the divorce, and the subsequent narky or angry book she wrote about it. It won the Vogel, and also Foal's Bread, when we talked about horses and how much she loved them and how broken-hearted she was at not being able to ride anymore. The reason she can't ride anymore is because of MS. Now, that led us to talk about death and how much a part of her life it is, and she briefly touched on euthanasia and said that she'd frequently thought about ending her life. But we share an attitude to euthanasia, we also share some doubts, which I might raise with her today. But when we discussed death, and she wondered about what it was going to be like, and she told me that atheists like me were in for a beautiful surprise. And having died a few times on the hospital bed, and then after, would you believe, an electric shock in her adapted ambulance, she knew she would be greeted with great love when she went. Well, I don't know about that, young lady, but you're greeted with great love on your return to our little program. First of all, before we get stuck into the new book...
I'm so glad, Philip.
Yeah. Sorry?
I'm so glad.
That you're here.
To be greeted with great love, yeah.
Well, we are. We've got a very special friendship.
Hmm, it's true. It has spanned many, many years from when I first read you as a child, yeah.
We're going to talk about the writing later, but it would be inappropriate for me not to talk about the state of play. How crook are you at the moment?
Oh, I'm just slowly declining, but sort of I've got an exuberance with each and every day because I'm back home now after a decade away. I'm back in my hometown of Grafton with all my beloved sisters around me, and one of whom stemmed the decision to leave when I turned 50 by giving me the gift of a white, silver-white Arabian stallion who now is in the paddock opposite my bed. So, yeah, that was a pretty good decision.
Thinking about death a lot?
All the birds of the air fell a-sighing and a-sobbing when I heard of the death of poor Cock Robin. And you see the dilemma with how the present legislation stands with voluntary euthanasia is the trouble is I have to be the sparrow with my little bow and arrow, which is very hard. Yeah, it's very hard.
Well, let's look at that before we move on, because while we both support voluntary euthanasia, you're concerned that it sometimes produces a zealotry amongst its supporters, which can frighten you.
Well, it is more that as the legislation stands, it's more like backyard abortions of the 1950s. I'll have to go down a lonely lane by myself.
Did you read Joan Didion's essay, 2009 essay on the subject?
I didn't.
Let me read a bit of it to you. Few of us want to be perceived as considering our own lives as more important than the ongoing life and prosperity of the family. Few of us will sit with a husband or wife or child in a lawyer's office or a doctor's office and hesitate to sign the piece of paper that will mean, when the day goes downhill, the least trouble for all concerned. And she goes on to express or talk about what she feels like the pressure that may be mounted on someone with a terminal illness.
Mm.
And I think it's something that those of us who support voluntary euthanasia have got to be awfully careful about.
But, I mean, I guess I just look at it in terms of reality now, that I thought with willpower alone I could stave off the disease, but this has not proved so. And therefore, like one day last year, I went totally blind, absolutely blind, which is what happened to my grandfather. So how far down the track do I want to go? Not that far down the track. No. So.
And it came back? Your sight came back, what, within hours?
Yeah, practically immediately after going. But I was weeping and sobbing, I was.
You talk about Betty Cuthbert. That's not a life.
Well, I feel that really, I mean, I read a feature on her present life, and she can move but one hand. And that's a very sad fate for a champion sprinter, I think. I mean, I know she has found God in a very absolute way, but yeah, it's not my way.
It's important you to have at least the potential of control, isn't it? That's something we talked about last time.
It is. And I mean, the cat with the coloured tail very much is about being able to move into a position of happiness. And I feel, well, how can I live happily if my body has crumbled totally? It's very hard.
Well, but certainly not your mind. It's interesting. I'm just reading the last of Oliver Sacks's many books, and Oliver is now absolutely at the end of his life. His pain has been somewhat ameliorated by the fact that he suddenly discovers that he's in love, which is an astonishing adventure for a bloke in his 80s. But nonetheless, he, like you, wonders at what point it's just not worth living.
Love is such a delicate and difficult subject. Can it keep you alive?
He thinks it can. He thinks that, in fact, falling in love, for some physiological reason, perhaps endorphins that are produced by being in love, that it's lowered his pain, that he's no longer in the same agony because he's in love.
Do you remember what the fox told the little prince? He said, "It is only with the heart that you see rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye." And I feel that the truth of those words, and that it's very connected into what I've tried to gather into my fable. I've tried to gather in the wisdom of love.
Time to talk then about the book. And something else that Sacks says is that he finds that when the end is near, it gives him a huge spurt of creative energy. And you've found that too.
I think that is correct. Although for somebody who writes in solitude, or who used to write in solitude, the present reality of living with such severe disability now, it's a great challenge to find that corner, that sort of beautiful burrow of solitude, yes.
I want you to tell us a fable about an ice cream salesman, Mr. Hooper, who was taught small acts of kindness by his cat.
Yes. Well, these two characters, the cat with the coloured tail, and Mr. Hooper, they came about, of all places, in the South Australian Mallee, where I was camped. And I know you'll probably think this sounds like a segment of New Age nonsense, but there was a lunar eclipse.
You turn New Age nonsense into something quite magical, so I suspend all my cynicism.
Well, I knew I wanted to write a book that was more in line with what Paul Gallico used to write.
Your cat that died was called Paul Gallico.
That's true.
That.
You were correct. And Paul Gallico owned 23 cats when he wrote his famous book, The Snow Goose. He lived in a lighthouse with 23 cats. So I wanted to align myself with a different kind of writing from what I've written previously, which, although it has found its readership, I wanted to write something more to do with those books of childhood that you just lived through as a child and with excitement grabbed them from the shelf of the library. And, I wanted to enter into that hallowed realm with my book.
So while this is in effect a children's fable, like all the best children's books, it's equally valid for grown-ups or people who think of themselves as grown-up.
Yes, I feel it is. And I don't know if you've read the last lines of my acknowledgement. Okay, I really do believe that the coloured pencils of the world hold a place. They hold a place for changing the diabolical things happening on Earth at the moment.
Well, you talk in the book about the heart of the world being in danger.
I feel when you look at what is going on, even as we speak, in every direction is horror. And I would like to take my coloured pencils into the world of the Taliban and say, let's proffer these to the girl suicide bombers in Nigeria. Instead of bombs and grenades, let's give them coloured pencils and remind those Islamic extremists that Muhammad, now I only found this out recently, he had a very precious cat called Mueza, who he loved so much, she was a female cat, that when the call to prayer came out and she was asleep on his robe, he got out a pair of scissors and cut off the sleeve of his robe so that he didn't disturb his cat. Now, I don't know, I didn't know that until recently. I feel it holds some hope, Philip, for stopping this war, this eternal thousand-year-old war between the Islamic world and the Christian world.
Tell us about a doco you saw, which was very influential, From the Heart of the World.
Did you watch that? No. Well, this is about a tribe of Indians in the Sierra Nevada de Santa Marta, west of Colombia, and they cut themselves off from the Western devastation, mining and oil drills, and they just live in this place wherein perfection still exists. And like archaeologists kind of have found what they call the lost city up there in one of the folds of the Sierra Nevada. And the Kogis believe that Earth has reached its final most point of danger. And so they're calling out to, they call us the little brother. They're saying, come to your senses. The Earth is in such grave danger. Which you see, my character, the cat, and Mr. Hooper, they're drawn to try to save the heart of the world from the end. Yes.
This is Late Night Live, and you're listening to the unmistakable voice and words of Gillian Mears. Incidentally, I'm required to say that you can listen to us on air, online, and on your tablet. Do you have a tablet?
I do.
I do.
It's very useful, though destructive of the paper world. Like all my devices, I still carry paper, but my devices turn the paper into cloth. You know, it's been carried around so long and so unwritten upon, the paper turns into cloth, which is sad.
This spurt of creativity means that you're working on a new novel and a second book for kids.
That's true.
You keep setting yourself goals.
Yes. They're very far-reaching. Are they enough? Are they enough, like Oliver Sacks says? Can I fall in love with my books enough to stay here? I'm not sure. I think The White Stallion holds a greater reason for life.
Are you conscious of being greatly loved by so many people? And does it sustain you?
Nothing can take away from the physical struggle of each day. For a person who used to love her athletic self, it's very hard just to have lost, I feel like I'm Daphne turning into a tree. My legs have become like tree trunks. Very difficult. Yes. But I feel a responsibility to the whole future and the whole future of euthanasia in Australia, because I recently discovered I was pouring my Nembutal from a plastic container into a glass Vegemite jar, and I just, out of curiosity, I dipped my finger in to see what it tastes like. And what the Philip Nischke's of the world don't tell you is that it is vile beyond description.
Oh, dear, oh, dear.
No, it's
That's
like
bad a, news.
It's like a Shakespearean brew of horror, and if only it could be put into a tablet.
Or given some nice fruit flavouring, perhaps.
I don't think you could
I'll get on to Nitsky and demand that he market a product. Do you know that Philip is now a stand-up comedian? Have I told you this story?
No.
Years and years ago, I was running a festival of ideas in Brisbane and also a particular session, and there was a no-show. The putative guest didn't turn up.
Right.
And I see Nitsky over there. I say, Philip, you've got to come and stand in. Just go out and be funny. And, of course, I was being funny, suggesting Dr. Death could be funny. He was bloody hilarious.
Right.
And I said to him all those years ago, one of these days you'll be a stand-up comedian. And as we sit and speak, he's doing a stand-up comedy act at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival.
Are you serious?
I am serious. I wouldn't make that up.
I met Carl Barron the other day in the Grafton Saracen Theatre. He was a comedian from Longreach who I was honoured to meet him because he's very funny in his body. I don't know if Philip can manage a few dance steps in his routine.
I haven't actually seen what he's doing, but I'll check that out and let you know.
But for you who loves a cup of tea, yeah, you would understand what I'm talking about.
Gillian, lovely to see you. Can we make an arrangement to meet again in a couple of years?
I really hope so.
Promise? Okay. Gillian Mears, the author of a number of celebrated books, amongst them Foal's Bread, which many can consider her masterpiece, and now The Cat with the Coloured Tail. Now, she's moved down in scale from horses to cats, but the intensity doesn't change. And this is or was L&L, and on our next, political scientist Peter W. Singer, in the context, of course, of disability, a very, very controversial figure, and he's going to be talking on 21st century warfare. And talking about warfare, that feminist warrior Anne Summers will join me to discuss 21st century feminism. Stick around now for the news while Gillian and I will keep nattering on in private.